Join us for PR Safari, a podcast by Center for Public Relations. PR Safari, your ultimate guide to navigate the complex PR landscape in Africa. Find us at www.cpr.africa.
Hello, my name is Chris Wangalwa. Our guest and guide for this episode is Ruben Odanga. Ruben is an accomplished and passionate filmmaker in the film and TV industry in Kenya. He has made a significant impact on the Kenyan audience and has garnered a dedicated fan base for creating captivating and award-winning productions. One of Odanga's most pivotal contributions to the Kenyan film and TV industry is his Swahili telenovela Selina, a two-time Kalasha Award winner that revolutionized the way Kenyan viewers engage with local content. He has produced other successful TV series productions such as Saida, Q, and Pink Ladies, as well as Nafsi, a debut feature film on Netflix, and which enjoyed an impressive 8-week run in cinemas. He continues to push boundaries and create compelling content that resonates with audiences in Kenya and beyond. He is the executive producer at Multan Production. In this episode, Ruben helps us figure out the best way to produce video content.
I go back to the basics of communication anytime I sit down to craft my scripts or any production. Feedback is king. And whichever feedback, because basically feedback means that people have interacted with my content and they're reacting to it. I also do a lot of research, and some of the research is not necessarily based on my industry. It could be based on just, you know, the general state of the economy. The numbers, what are the numbers saying? What are the majority of the people in this country? How many of them have access to a smart mobile phone? Where are we? What's the mood of the nation? Recently, we just finished a dramedy, and I think it's doing very well because it's a very light, heartful show in a time when things are very tough economically. So I find those small information help you create a messaging or a story that resonates with the people. Once I've done my research, then we decide who do we think is our target audience. That becomes the second bit, because that also is very, very important when you're trying to create content.
How do you bring in mood to your content production, instantaneous especially? Because I've seen productions where they try to infuse what exactly is happening currently, even though the production began 2 years ago.
Sometimes it's difficult to infuse the current mood into a show because it's already been overtaken by events. You shot way back and things have just happened spontaneously, you know, could be socially, economically, culturally. But I think when you talk about mood also, in the bigger scope of things, you want to talk about seasons. For example, globally, there's a lot of Afrocentrism wave blowing with the Wakandas and the Burna Boys and wherever. There's a feel of going back home. And what that has done is that then people are now beginning to appreciate local, authentic, indigenous kind of content. So 5 years ago, our local telenovelas would feel very bougie and very westernized. Currently, we are still doing the same telenovela, but now we are doing it in Sheng, in a more realistic language that people feel like that could be my neighbor, or that could be me, or that could be. So I think as you're talking about mood and seasons, it's very important for you to understand where the industry is shaping. You'll find that the core item, the telenovela, the drama, the whatever, still remains the same, but the execution of it begins to change. Like in my industry, if you observe and see content that has been coming out of late is based on a lot of realism. Shows like Pepeta, shows like, especially the ones that are on YouTube and are raking millions. Jackie Vike's Disco Matanga, that is Awinja, Eddie Butita's Anastoto. People are just talking like normal, you know, it's like day-to-day kind of. We are working on a show currently that might be coming out around May. It's titled Morfire. We've also borrowed a lot of that. There's a lot of realism that when you look at that house, you feel like this could be our house. And that talks like my mom. And that one feels like my uncle. So I think that's where we're going. So as part of research for any communicator, because as a director, producer, I consider myself
communication. And you studied communication yourself.
I studied communications at Leicester. So it's very important that I'm aware about the seasons of where the global world is, the continent is, but also the country is. And I try to be relevant. I try to journey with them. So the genre of the show is still telenovela, but the execution is different. The treatment is different from how it was being treated 7 years ago.
There's the telenovela aspect that you obviously are immersed in. I would love to understand why and What makes your telenovelas tick?
So I got into telenovela by accident and also by research.
Okay.
Because around the year 2010, I think from around 2008 to 2010, 2012, in Kenya, people were doing a lot of dramas. And the dramas were very aspirational and they felt very English. And those that were being done in Sheng, unfortunately, Sheng is a very niched language. So majority of people are not getting it. And I was studying why the Mexican telenovelas are doing very well.
You studied casually or?
Casually, you know, I just kept on watching. There's one in particular, I don't know if I can remember the name. It was called Soy Tu Duona, something like that. Two things came up to me. One, there's a cultural aspect attached to them. And two, the aspirational aspect. Maybe I can add a third one, which is love. You never go wrong with it. So I curated a show based in Mombasa, telenovela. Telenovela is mainly driven by contrast, you know, rich, poor. So I curated around those kind of principles and immediately branded it as a Swahili telenovela. It did very well because of the cultural aspect. We shot it in Mombasa. It was called Saida. And that year, it actually scooped Best TV Drama, being able to beat big shows that were happening at that time. I think there was a show called Mali on NTV. There's a show called, there was Mali, and then there was Lies That Bind.
Oh, yes.
There's another one called Housemates or something. But then, you know, quickly people began to realize there's something interesting here about telenovelas. So any other jobs I started getting from there were, come, we want a telenovela. You know, I was being invited to curate more telenovelas because they speak to the masses, and for the basic reason that they are very aspirational. They have a sense of realness and they have love. Love is such a powerful thing.
Is there where you got this concept of caro and caro?
I heard it somewhere in a boardroom and it helped me define things, because this client was telling us, look, we have three audiences. We have Carol with an L at the end, or maybe L-E, Carol, and then we have Caro, and then we have Caro with a K. And he's just trying to tell us, look, guys, where are the numbers and who are we targeting? Are we doing a show for Carol or are we doing a show for Caro? That becomes very important, and I've used it always when I'm trying to curate a show. So, for example, for one of the biggest shows we've ever done called Selena, we did for a period of almost 5 years, 970 episodes. To date, we joke and say Selena is the king of telenovelas, the king of prime TV, because Selena must have rated from episode 1 to episode 970.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So for Selena, you know, client was very, very, very specific and saying, we are doing a show for Carol, but if Carol watches, we don't mind.
The spillovers.
Okay. Yeah, the spillovers, you don't mind. But our target audience is Caro.
Wait, Caro or Caro?
Caro. If Caro with a
Caro
K.
Caro with a K.
We are doing a show for Caro with a K.
Okay.
But if Carol watches, it's a spillover. We don't mind.
But you're skipping Caro.
We had bunched the two, Caro and,
okay.
And
okay.
Yeah.
It's like bourgeoisies, semi-bourgeoisies and peasants.
Correct. So we're doing a show for people in Kawangware and Mathare and Kibera. But if guys in Karen wants to peep in, it is fine. We are not saying no to them.
Yeah.
And I think that particular one is a case study because it was able to cut across all those classes. Selena, I think, was watched by both worlds.
How did it pick in terms of, where you sit and you're looking at the data? What was that data like? Because I would like to understand why they kept coming. Is that a case of initial research? Or continual research.
Then there used to be a Z-World channel on the DSTV, GoTV platforms, and their content was doing pretty well across Africa. And in some regions, it was doing better than even the local channels. And so I think the thinking around it was, why don't we try and get these guys who write for Z-World to write for local markets, or get their scripts and then do an adaptation for local markets? Because those guys have been doing telenovelas for almost 25 years. They understand their game. That was one. Two, also, Selena was launched during a time when TVs had gone on a strike. Remember, there's a time FTAs had an issue with
it. Was that the digitalization?
Yeah, and my thinking is that gave the only option on TV was Selena, because all the other brands were off air.
Uh-huh.
So by the time they're coming back, it's difficult for them to...
Opportunity meets preparedness.
Yeah. But third and more importantly, there was a lot of hard work that was put in Selena. I mean, Selena season one, we did it with all our hearts. It was do or die. From the actors, performance, production design, edit. And the client also brought in a few specialists from India, from South Africa, just to assist in creating a good show. And it was a good story, but the first two factors made it even great. By the time the other channels are coming back into the space, it's already taken off. It already has allegiance. And then something that all of us never saw coming is the reactions online. I remember I was driving home. I was from the edit at around, because it used to air, I think, 7:30 to 8, the first season. And then there was an uproar because people started saying they're still on traffic. They can't find it. So then it was moved to.
Nice.
Very interesting stories. So season one, I'm driving home at 8 p.m. I'm from the edit. And then someone calls me and tells me, what have you done? Have you seen the internet? Selena is all over. And I'm like, what's happening? So I get home. But I remember that particular scene is a scene where this guy is taking the wife. They've been having a quarrel. So this guy is taking the wife to the mirror and switches on this light on the mirror and tells the wife all these nasty things. We really pushed the actors in that scene. And the reactions on social media just went. And from that day, there was almost like a fanatic audience response.
You created
after every
a cult.
Yes, like after every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this fanatism grew to 300 comments a day, 500 comments a day. The day we have a good episode, it go to like 1,000 comments a day. Mm-hmm. So we quickly introduced live sessions every Thursday, where then we'd have actors immediately after the episode, the actors interact with the audience online. But another thing happened, I think episode 26, 27, there was a slight mix-up with the broadcasting of those episodes. They showed half of episode 26, and then when they went for a break, they came and showed half of the episode, the last bit of 27.
The first bit or the last bit?
They showed the first of 26 and the last of 27.
Accidentally or intentionally?
Accidentally.
Okay.
So they missed the last of 26 and the first of 27, uh-huh. And some audience picked it up. Uh-huh. And then because there's a fanatism... So they quickly, I remember my boss, we were talking to her, and then they quickly realized we cannot lose that audience. So they said the next, I think must have been Thursday, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So they say tomorrow we're going to give you a whole complete of 26 and a whole complete of 27. Then someone created a cash phrase called double bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the double bill now became a thing. But the double bill cost us,
mm-hmm.
because now the show that was supposed to be broadcasted for 5 months.
It has to cost you, yes.
Now... the show ended up running for like 4 months because now we couldn't remove the double bill.
Mm-hmm.
I think it used to air Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday is double bill.
Because you can't go back to one episode.
And you can't go back to one episode. That's the culture that was created around the show. And when we saw that, we decided that towards the end of the season, we're just going to try and build that culture. So we tried something. I think we were the first to do it in Kenyan TV, which was called a meet and greet. We just invited the audience from social media,
mm-hmm. to come physically.
To a cinema, and we watch the episodes with the uh-huh. actors, and they interact with the actors, and they just have a moment of picture ops and stuff like that. And it was amazing. But also, I must say that online fanatism, when they're not happy with you, also they're not happy with you. So the days they didn't like certain character, they didn't like the show, also we'd get 300 bad comments.
And how do you deal with that? Because that gets into the feedback element that you hold very highly. When there is bad feedback, what do you do? When there is good feedback, what do you do? How do you manage those kind of relationships?
You just have to try and be sober, try and be very objective about it, because feedback is good for any communicator. For me, as a filmmaker, feedback is the most important thing that I go for. If you are sober, and if you have a sober team, then you're able to analyze, are these people just being emotional? Or are they
asking for too much?
Are they asking for too much? Are they hating? Or actually, is there a point in what they're trying to say? Sometimes you'd realize just because they're very immersed in the story, they're forgetting that those who are characters, they're not real people. Sometimes the comments help you improve your show. It could be to do with a hair or wardrobe or something. Maybe they think a certain character who is that rich cannot have cheap hair. And as a male director, I used to miss a lot on small women.
I mean, you have an entire wardrobe team.
I do, but sometimes budgets. And sometimes you just miss things. You take it how it comes. But I think after three years later on, they pulled down the comments for Selena because the negative comments now became too much. And also sometimes just because people had found a platform to vent.
Uh-huh.
You're not even watching. You're
it's
waiting
really
for 8:30. Then you go to this platform where everyone is now spewing negativity. You join the bandwagon and you say whatever you want to say.
Yes. It reminds me of public interest organizations where sometimes even when you're just saying the good things, people just remind you of how they have their blackouts and how
correct
their airtime is not there.
Correct, mm-hmm. correct. So I think they felt maybe it's hurting their brand, so they stopped posting. The interesting thing that happened, because by the time they're pulling down the posting, we had two other shows, big shows, one from Mombasa, another one from Nairobi, that were doing relatively well. I had personally expected that those numbers will shift to these two other shows, but it didn't. So I think we need a lot of objectivity and maybe a scientific research to understand the why. Because sometimes on social media, you can be clouded by just, you know, the semantics and not understanding the real core reason why people are reacting the way they're reacting or saying whatever they're saying.
There was this video that went viral where one of your characters was it talking to the president or former president? Or?
Yes, that's Pascal Tokodi.
Was that intentional?
No, he's spontaneous like that. And that day, the show rated. He was driving, the former president was having a walk, and he took advantage. Many people say a lot of negative things as usual, because online everyone is an expert.
Yeah.
But for me, how I saw it is that was a perfect elevator pitch. You know, he told the president who he was and where his office is located, and it worked. People were calling me as if I'm the one who posted the video. Pascal is amazing. He saw a chance, an opportunity, and he grabbed it.
Maybe I'll take you back to storytelling. Is there a way that you treat your way of telling stories, or is that a secret?
Is there like a system or a way? No, but I'd say this is what I do, or this is what I'm looking for. One, I try to define things. I try to go back to the basics, because the basics then define the bigger pictures. You will never fail with the basics. Mm-hmm. I digress, but I think in this country, if we go back to the basics, we'll do very well. We can't be talking about nuclear and we're struggling to pick rubbish. So for me, what is a good story? A good story is a story that has a beginning, middle, and end. I look at small things that define or that can help me communicate effectively. Where the people are, what is the mood of the country. I look for those elements of a good story, elements of a good character. I look for themes that are emotional, because as humans, we connect at an emotional level. Even if the subject matter is very scientific and broad, for something that is visual, I try to look for the emotional connection between these two big characters who are discussing something very scientific or very practical.
Finally, on that aspect of Carol.
Carol,
yes. With the L may not come out, but it is there in my head. Carol.
Yes.
In terms of some of the films or productions I've watched from you, there is the element of love sold so much, and there is the element of aspiration that you didn't expound. I come from the most remote area of the country, and I see myself being like that billionaire. Is that intentional? Is that a philosophy? Is that how to get into people's psyche? What is it?
The structure of telenovelas. One, as a producer, director, filmmaker, you need to understand your genre, and you have to align to the principles of that particular genre. There's a reason why it's done that way. So because telenovelas are housed around contrast and aspiration, is because the majority of the audience that telenovelas are targeting are people, I can say, middle and lower class. But we still have the rich, some of them watch. I don't know if it's a scientific thing that the people in the lower cadre get like a...
Like, it's like their opium.
Yeah, when they see a rich person suffering, I don't know if it's there. But the aspirational bit is because I try also to, when I analyze it in a very simple way, I say in the evening when we are driving to bars and wherever to go and have a drink, the guys who are walking or the guys who are taking a bus are going home to watch telenovelas because that's their opium. And after I'm coming from a hustle of boda boda or mjengo or, you know, cooking for people, I don't want to go watch another show where someone else is killing another person. I want something that will take me away from what is normal to me. And even the aspirational level, we usually bring it down to, even if you're shooting a room in the ghetto, we will try and pimp it in such a way that if there's a boy or a girl who lives in the ghetto, they'll want to replicate that into their home. So we sell style, fashion, and all that.
So you don't do the doom and gloom as it is?
We'll have something. We'll have a lampshade in a house in Mumias. It has a big impact because the time then even that boy in Mumias will go and start looking for a lampshade to try and replicate the same in their house. And so the genre of telenovelas dictates that it's done that way. And there's a slight, there's a very thin line between telenovelas and soaps. Telenovelas came from soaps. Primarily, soaps were very North America, and they were very long and slightly slow. A good example is Bold and Beautiful. Telenovelas tended to have a very fast-paced story and have an end, being able to play around with emotions up and low. And then in telenovelas, they try to build the actors to be bigger than even the story. If you're keen, you realize the story just keeps going round and round, but we fall in love with Pascal and Helen Kelly, and not necessarily the story. The story is not necessarily new, but the actors become bigger than the story. Now there's even a new genre that is coming out that we're calling it novella, and which is a mixture of drama and telenovela. I've tried to infuse that in the new show that we're working on.
Is that
on
an innovation or it exists?
Novella? It's an innovation that is coming. It's already picked up in South America.
Okay.
It's just seeping into Africa. So I'm trying to do that in my new show, More Fire. I think a good example of a novella, I would say, is a show like La Casa de Papel, Money Heist. Because it's a drama, and then all of a sudden, people are in this thing, they are robbing a bank, and then they're falling in love.
Yeah, like, and then you want to hate them.
We totally suspend reality.
Yeah.
So things are also moving with time. Mm-hmm. I think also because society is also evolving, so certain aspects are also changing very, very quickly. Generally, as a filmmaker and as communication, I think there's a lot of power in TV and films and how they can be used to shape and influence society and culture and style. And I just wish that more corporate would put a keen eye, and even government would put a keen eye. I see government is trying currently with the shows like Mpakani and stuff like that. We all grew up in the 80s and early 90s knowing that the U.S. Army is the best, because everything we watched about Vietnam,
they really saw that.
Yeah, so I just wish that government and corporates can use the power of storytelling in films and in telenovelas and TV dramas to push their agenda. Trust me, the impact lasts long.
How can they pull that? Because, okay, guide us, how?
I mean, and that's where we come in, the storytellers who come in, the filmmakers who come in, is creating characters and stories and themes around brands without necessarily pushing the brands onto our faces.
Oh, yeah.
But slowly sliding them and making them repetitive and consistent in people's mind, and in a very short time, that sticks in your subconscious. You know what I mean?
Soft power, sort of.
Soft power of sorts. I mean, even the greatest of all who ever walked on this planet, Jesus, he preached using parables. So there's something surely he knew that we can replicate. And just all over the world, if you look at the trends, that's where we are. I think we've been a bit slow in this region, but things are changing. I just wish that would happen a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Then we'll be able to tell more bold stories, and stories that are not necessarily anchored by broadcasters, because you see, when a broadcaster gives you a deal, then that becomes their agenda. But we have a very big opportunity with young adults, with children. We are doing a lot of adult stuff. We're not doing a lot of children stuff that is authentic, that is African, that is Kenyan. And also, we are not doing a lot of maybe say 45 to 60 kind of content that appeals to that generation.
I see. Thank you very much, Ruben. I enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you.